the LGBTI community. Always a joy to have him. Bronte, good morning. Welcome to Front Page.
Oh, good morning, Rob, and thanks for having me again.
Always good. It's a subject that we feel more comfortable about speaking of. It's very engaging. I'm seeing equality in our community more and more. There's still some hidden, sad people who have not yet embraced it, and unfortunately, few of them still in decision-making positions in our country. But generally speaking, the community is finally embracing a world that you are a classic example of having to hide in for most of your adult life. And I think it's always good to remind people, Bronte, of your own circumstances of being a late bloomer, a man who always found it difficult to deal with your own sexuality, but now you've stepped out and stepped out proudly and represent your community well.
Thank you. And there's lots of us who are in the same situations. Oh, we've got to remember that to be homosexual was a criminal act in all of our states and territories, and Tasmania finally made it decriminalised it in 1997. That's not that long ago, but you're talking about being hidden and about people generally coming on board, and that's exactly correct. But some institutions are still lagging behind too. I had the privilege of attending a conference at Melbourne University Thursday, Friday, Saturday on death and dying, and really it was about redesigning death care, so it took into account things like animal care and palliative care and aged care, as well as the funeral industry. And one of the points I made in a session that I chaired of five of us who were from the LGBTIQ plus community and a very strong straight ally, was that even the forms that are used today right across, from birth, death, marriages to funeral directors to aged care homes to hospitals, still have the single marker of M or F. And we know that lots of people are not assigned the right sex, if you still want to use that word, at birth, and that there are far more options than just far more sexes, if you will, which are determined by presence or absence of genitalia than M or F, but not according to the bureaucrats. And that follows us into death and dying and death care. And so, you know, it's pretty tricky for many of us in the LGBTIQ plus community to come out as gay or lesbian or queer or transgender in, say, palliative care or in aged care, let alone, you know, and there's all sorts of cases where the spouse, the legal spouse of people in the gay community have been just completely ignored by, well, certainly palliative care, but also aged care and certainly funeral homes.
I'm glad I took the time to have a conversation with you pre-talking to you, and already an example has popped up of someone I was talking to in the corridors here at the Pulse about the cringe-worthiness of going to the funeral of a gay man some time ago and having knowing the circumstances and not having those circumstances portrayed in a service and certainly beyond that. And it did make me realise that my view of it that I expressed to you on limited information was incorrect, and I'm happy enough to firstly thank you for the clarity, but also now straight away an example of what you're saying, that you know, this is a funeral, and I've been through the case of others. It is the story of one's life, and it should be told openly, proudly, and without fear or favour.
And that's where sometimes the problem is, because, you know, a young person who might be transgender and has transitioned certainly openly to friends, but the family takes over the organisation of the funeral. And, you know, there are certainly cases we know of that reflect the parents' religious views. So the service, the ceremony was held in a church. The trans person had no association with the church other than having gone to a faith-related school, possibly. And there was no mention of the transition. They just talked about this what we call dead name, their old name before transitioning. And there was no recognition of the fact that the person was part of the LGBTIQ plus community. It's that sort of, I call it erasure, you know, it's just completely gross denial of perhaps half that person's life. And that's where we come back to your point that we talk openly and have tributes and eulogies of people in the community at a time that we want to remember them and just express our love for them. And sometimes that's, for people in the queer community, that's just completely out of kilter.
We've spoken a lot about progress, Bronte. Your own personal life is an example of that, and how you can now live completely open and happy about where you're at. But, and we've made some huge amounts of progress in other areas, but this is one I hadn't thought of. So after a seminar that you had over those 3 days, and it's been openly discussed, are you sensing now that this is an area where progress could happen quickly?
Oh, very much so. So there were quite a number of university papers presented, which were quite academic, and I'll use the word heteronormative. So it just assumes that the paper assumes that everyone's straight and cisgender, as in not transgender. So completely, you know, it's this bias that happens when we do works like that. Through to panels which discussed, you know, there's an amazing vet located in Geelong who specialises in animal care and just really sensitive animal care at the time of death. And so she was on a panel. There are all sorts of discussions around the stigma on the panel that I chaired, the stigma and discrimination, the fear of bringing up criminalisation, past criminal records, all of that sort of thing that occurs when someone from the LGBTIQ plus community is dying or dies, and, you know, or being admitted into palliative care. For example, I brought up the scenario of imagine being the CEO of a palliative care facility and you've taken on a new client who has been admitted as transgender, but the person has quite advanced dementia and has in fact forgotten that 32 years ago they transitioned. How do you manage that? So we're saying that this isn't doing anything other than treating LGBTIQ plus people in the manner that enables some respect and some authenticity of their lives to be reflected, whether it's in palliative care or aged care or, you know, in the death care industry.
Yeah, look, it's a good point, and I've been through a personal situation where there was some angst when a person's life was portrayed accurately at a funeral, and it was about the assumption that someone else should take the view of how this person's life was lived and led, but this is a perfect example of surely at the last stage of a person's life they have the right and people around them the obligation to tell a factual assessment of that person's life.
And that's where, you know, we talked on the weekend about things called wills and enduring powers of attorney and a reasonably newcomer on the block called an advanced care directive. And they're documents that outline, the advanced care directive outlines exactly what you want to happen at end of life for you. And it's quite emotional, and it's difficult stuff filling this out with perhaps your partner or your spouse. But it's the one thing that enables, because it's signed off by you and your GP, it's the one thing that enables your final wishes to be carried out. And it's the one document that's been authorised by state government here in Victoria that enables the final wishes of someone who is LGBTIQ plus to be carried out to the letter. And it prevents, you know, blood families taking over and organising perhaps a farewell or, you know, disposal of the person's possessions in a way that person just didn't want. It lays it out very clearly.
Bronte, I want to talk to you about your day job, your real job. You're one of them. You're a marriage celebrant. And since the gay marriage became legal, and there's so many people have been able to openly express their love and live as normal couples. During the carrying out of the ceremonies, which I'm sure you've done plenty now over a long period of time, are you noticing during that joyous occasion that the congregation will be not necessarily all gay people? They'll have come from all walks of life. Are you noticing a real open acceptance now that this is just part of our normal life?
Yeah, there's a variance between... there's a difference. So I'll give you an example. Last Friday night, I married two women from the Philippines, both, but they've been together. They married on their 13th anniversary, and we married in a hotel in the city, and with them was one of their siblings, who he and his wife have flown out from the United States, and all the others, all the siblings and the parents on both sides, had flown from the Philippines. It would have been 20 of them. And deeply Catholic people, these people, the parents even, deeply Catholic. But one of the two women said to me, love always conquers reason, right? And so these people embraced these two women, and all the guys were given rainbow ties to wear, all the women were given rainbow pins to wear, and it was just such a joyful embracing, not only of the women and their faith, but also the fact that they're lesbians. Compare that with quite a number of couples I get to marry who, you know, will come out here. They live closeted lives, very well, for good reason, because they're from countries not only where there's no marriage equality, but where there's Sharia law. And they can't even exchange a wedding ring, because it's a signal, right, that these two people are married if they're walking together or whatever. So I suggest they swap a wristwatch, perhaps, or a piece of jewellery, which still has the same significance to them. And they'll come out and they'll get legally married here. I'll even provide the two legal witnesses that are required, and they'll go back and live perhaps as, you know, roommates or housemates, and they'll go about their life, and they'll have had no family at all, no friends, because no one can know that they're married. And I get quite a number of those sorts. So, and a whole range of things in between, I think, as well.
Yeah, sad we've still got progress to make, but we've made progress, and that is good, and anything that's been hidden in our society, well, it's been in our society since time immemorial, but it's been hidden for so long, for it to come out and be totally accepted is a slow turning wheel, but I think we've advanced a lot in a relatively short period of time, which makes me feel pretty good about things. What other things are you in the process of advocating for, because you're a very good advocate for your community?
Thank you. So the Greater Melbourne Cemeteries Trust, which is based at Faulkner in Faulkner, has started to plan for the next big memorial park cemetery, and it's located out at Werribee at a site called Harkness. And it's on in old terms, it's around 370 or 80 acres. It's massive, but it's got to be, right? So right now it's farmland. And there's a small group of us who have been involved in the consultation group around that to try and get a rainbow space, a contemplative space where people can just go and think and reflect and memorialise the people from the community who have died, but also to have, just as there will be, I'm sure, a Muslim section, a Catholic section, an Italian section, we want a queer section there that's safe for us to hold ceremonies and to, you know, either to inter cremated remains or to bury people or just to go and reflect on people and hold space for those people. So that's the fact that we're even being, you know, embraced in that sort of development is just fantastic, really. Because one of the things I think I said to you earlier before we began this chat is that right now, if you go to any cemetery, and let's just say Victoria, because we're in Victoria, you go to any cemetery in Victoria and try to find the grave of a famous trans person or a, you know, a celebrated lesbian or whatever, you can't, because sexuality is not a marker, but we can go and find people from any kind of, you know, there's a space for various religious groups and various ethnic groups and so on, and in some cemeteries even space for animals, but not for queer people. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do at Harkness, is to get some markers around sexuality, which will enable us to be visible rather than invisible.
Bronte, we've run out of time. Well, thank you for your clarity again. You've enlightened me, and I hope many others out there, with your commentary this morning. Look forward to another one. I think we'll definitely have to have a chat before the 26th of November, because I think it's important as we get close to that election that people get some clarity around some other issues. And again, your community is being thrown around in the political spectrum at the moment, and I think it's good to have a discussion about that. So let's check in about the middle of November and see how that goes, and let's get some clarity on where people's thinking is being directed, because I sense that's what's happening at the moment.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Good on you, mate. All the very best. Bronte Price, talking about matters LGBTQI+, and it's very important. And again, we've got some progress to make still, but my goodness, we've made a lot of progress, and it's good to see people like Bronte advocating for that.